Have you ever wondered why we say phrases like beat around the bush, kitty corner, or rule of thumb? Actually, I say catty corner, and I say pop instead of soda, crick instead of creek. And do you say envelope or envelope? As someone who has made his living with the spoken and written word since he was 18, I'm fascinated by words, colloquialisms, and sayings, and their roots. Enter Why Do We Say That? A fun new father-son podcast that answers all those word and phrase questions that you were too lazy to Google. Host Scott and Liam Kelly have the answers to the questions, where does that come from, and why do we say that? They know you could look it up online, but why not have them do the work for you and have a fun time listening? And what about giving 110%, which has always made me crazy since that's theoretically impossible? Get this, it came from the 16th century, and that's all I'm going to tell you. You got to listen for more details. Oh, and I like their feature, Word or Not a Word. I recently talked about the word conversate not being a word on this podcast. Wish I had them as backup on that one. Why Do We Say That? A new podcast. Heard on iTunes.
Warning, the podcast you are about to hear is often based on true events and people. It chronicles the dialogue and actions of random, anonymous, obnoxious, self-entitled, unintelligent, self-centered idiots, attention whores, ignoramuses, dolts, clods, nimrods, douches, weirdos, drama queens, overly sensitive crybabies, and people who think they are better, more important, and special than the rest of us. In one word, amateurs.
It's Amateur Nation with Lou Santini. We call attention to and call out the amateurs, the people who are doing life wrong, the speed bumps of life, the people that are in your way every day. You know them, the unintelligent, obnoxious, attention-whoring, self-entitled drama queen victim types who chip away at the moments of your life due to no self-awareness, common sense, manners, or social skills that are disturbing the flow of the pros. Hi, Mom.
Oh, hey, Lou.
Amateur Nation, it's not just a podcast, it's a movement. Welcome to episode 114, Amateur Nation, founded on feelings. Topic number one. I love Formula One. Fun fact, it is the fastest growing sport on social media. But seven-time F1 world champion Lewis Hamilton is now an amateur. He had to be opportunistic and endorse Black Lives Matter. Just another trendy bandwagoner amateur celebrity. So, you're telling me that Lewis Hamilton's life has been nothing but a life full of oppression and racism. Now, I'm not saying money means you haven't suffered any kind of hardship, be it medical, financial, societal, familial, etc. I'm not saying he hasn't encountered racism. But you're telling me, simply because of the color of his skin, that every minute of every day has been a lifelong struggle? I'm not saying he even said that every minute of every day has been a lifelong struggle, but he has expressed sentiments about his oppression throughout his life. Seems like you did pretty good for yourself, seven-time world champion for Formula One, who has a net worth of over $285 million and lives a lifestyle literally only 20 men on the planet currently live. In fact, if anything, you should prove that because of your minority race, you rose against and above, and you triumphed and succeeded with what I'm sure was extremely hard work, sacrifice, dedication, focus, and discipline. But no one's going to know about that, because now this is at the forefront. Make no mistake, living the life of an F1 driver is an insulated lifestyle. It is not like the lifestyle you, the average listener, and I live. F1 drivers start their careers young, just like drag racers. But instead, Lewis Hamilton took the victim route for attention. How come we never heard anything about his stance against racism up until Black Lives Matter? How come we never heard about his struggle and lifelong battle against racism up until now? Because until BLM came on full force, few celebrities and sports figures ever even mentioned it. How about his half-brother with cerebral palsy, who drives a specially engineered car? That is a daily struggle. I'm willing to bet that man faced a life full of being made fun of, being told he can't, and being constantly made aware that he has a tough go of it most days. How come people who have a handicap, whether it's physical or mental, or perhaps struggled against poverty or racism or discrimination, and succeeded and rose up through the ranks, I'm looking at you professional athletes and the Hollywood elite, never give speeches about how to overcome that and how they did it? and how they ignored those hardships and persevered despite tough odds. It's always like, I was molested and I was poor and I was made fun of, and those are all horrible things, but they never counter that with, here's how I overcame that. We just assume that, well, you know, my career speaks for itself. Look at how well I'm doing. They don't tell you how they overcame that, which would be so much more credible and inspirational and would do more for the greater good than just throw their arms up and go, yeah, I know I'm rich and famous and I have everything, but it was hard. I'm looking at you, Meghan Markle. Why do they never give those inspirational speeches and life lessons? Because the Hollywood elite and professional athletes indeed are living and leading a privileged life. It is a gift. And many, not all, but many professional athletes have those careers is because of their genetics. Tall, muscular, fast, naturally gifted. I'm not saying they don't work hard. I'm not saying they didn't sacrifice. Of course not. Of course they did. They worked hard. They sacrificed. But it sure as hell helped that they have those exceptional, next level, less than 1% genetics. And the Hollywood elite that were blessed with those next level, freakishly good looks, again, not saying they don't work hard, didn't work hard, didn't struggle and sacrifice for their craft either. But instead of cherishing your talents and dedication, these professional amateur athletes and professional amateur entertainers simply choose to play the victim role and tell how oppressed you are. Or worse, tell you that they understand the struggles of minorities, while doing little to nothing to help, besides, my favorite, creating awareness, usually in the form of a tweet or a social media video. Remember the song Imagine, that medley that was on Twitter, that was a complete half-assed job done by some attention-seeking Hollywood types? Yeah, very few people do remember that, because it reeked of amateur status. It was a complete slap in the face. Did any of those celebrities contribute money to small businesses and restaurants and bars that were decimated in California, particularly the Los Angeles area, where those celebrities frequent? Of course not. And if, trust me, if they did, you would have heard about it. They're not going to let that PR go to waste. Shame on you, Lewis Hamilton, and shame on all the elite who have wealth, success, fame, money, and an easier life despite being a minority and choose to still host a pity party rather than be an example of perseverance. They think they're being role models by simply living it up and posting photos of them living their best life. They're simply teaching, no matter what, you have it rough. That's what they teach, regardless of how much success. And let me be clear that money doesn't solve all your problems. I'm not that naive. It certainly fucking helps. It does. I've had problems when I'm broke, and I've had problems when I have more comfortability financially. Trust me, it's a lot easier to deal with those problems when you're not worrying about your finances. To simply throw yourself under the bus claiming, I'm just like you, because you are simply of the same color that is not white, is nothing but a cry for attention that is unwarranted, and it is amateur. Topic number two. Remember how amateurs need attention by taking pictures of their food? I've got good news. I'm seeing less of it. The bad news is it's now replaced with amateurs virtue signaling by posting photos showing how they got the vaccine, because they're good people who care about you. You, the guy listening to this right now, the young lady listening to this right now, they care about you. You didn't know that? They care about you. Remember how they called you and asked how you were doing and then came over and yelled at you for not wearing a mask? Sidebar, so masks work, right? That's what amateurs say. And vaccines work, right? That's what amateurs say. And yet President Cryptkeeper is pleading with states to have mask mandates. So which is it, amateurs? Do masks work or not after a year or more? And do these vaccines, which have been cranking out like crazy, work or not? And does the combination of these two work or not? Amateurs like that will never feel safe. In the same way, they'll never have enough attention and reassurance because they're weak in every sense of the word. They should stay home, masked up, and pumped full of untested medicine. But stay out of our faces and our business. Pros have lives to live. Why do amateurs feel the need to post photos of them getting the COVID vaccine? Simple, virtue signaling. Look what a good, obedient little humanitarian citizen I am. Long live communist China! Are you posting the results of your proctology exam? Your gynecology exam? What? Well, no, Lou, of course not. That because that's more, what, because it's more invasive? Did you post when you got your plain old regular flu shot, a tetanus shot? Which, by the way, flu is down 99% from last year. It's a miracle! Why is your medical procedure need for broadcast? See also donating blood. Why stop there? Post your Botox procedures, your dental cleanings, pep smears. COVID is not an automatic death sentence. You're taking a shot that is endorsed by celebrities. And why is that, by the way? You don't think that's suspicious, amateur nation? Have celebrities ever endorsed plain old regular flu shots, yearly physicals, healthy diet and exercise programs? No. The answer is no. At least not at the level we're seeing. There might have been, I don't know, I'm sure maybe some celebrity got paid to endorse some kind of prescription medication. I'm talking about this mass endorsement from the Hollywood elite and professional athletes and politicians to, look, we're doing it. Okay, yeah, good luck with that. You don't think it's suspicious that celebrities are endorsing an untested vaccine? Just wait for those commercials. If you or someone you know took the COVID vaccine and died or grew a horn, you might be entitled to compensation. Oh, wait, you're not allowed to sue. That's also not fishy at all, is it? And has a lower preventive cure rate than your own body. Why would you go out of your way to invite those toxins into your body? Because you don't want to get sick? No one wants to get sick. But since when did you think you'd never get sick your entire life? But Lou, I'm in a high-risk category. Whatever happened to your all-life-saving mask and staying home and standing 6 feet apart? You amateurs volunteering for the vaccine are exactly the type of person they, the government, big tech, and communist China want. Highly suggestible, a follower, someone who must be trendy, a virtue signaler, and someone that just assumes that the government and big tech, this time in the form of Big Pharma, has your best interests at heart. Big Pharma, the companies that can make insulin for pennies on the dollar and sells it for hundreds of dollars per prescription, thanks to President Braindead. But at least you did your part to be a good little citizen that soon will be tracked. Maybe you won't get the virus. You know, the one that has a 99% survival rate anyway. Quick reminder, follow me on Instagram at LouSantini3 and on Facebook at facebook.com/LouSantiniEntertainment. We'll be right back in about 60 seconds. There's been an odd shift in human behavior over the last 15 plus years. A sense of entitlement. A constant need for attention.
Ironically coupled with the need to be left alone.
A desire to be treated the same as everyone else. Stupidly combined with the mindset of, I'm special, so treat me accordingly.
Introducing the book, Amateur Nation. The Decline of Common Sense, Manners, and Social Skills. The second edition. Inside, you'll read,
The Amateur Mission Statement.
The 30 Truths About Amateurs. The 4 Stages of Being an Amateur.
Amateur habitats and history.
Social media plus me, me, me equals amateur.
Technology and amateur behavior.
With dozens of real funny photos, weird signs, and laugh out loud real life accounts and actual conversations vividly showing how us pros are surrounded by amateur nation every day. Download the expanded second edition of the ebook Amateur Nation, The Decline of Common Sense, Manners, and Social Skills.
The second expanded edition, available now.
Be a pro. Go to Amazon. Type Amateur Nation.
Topic number 3. And now, the racist thing of the week. Here's your headline from the postmillennial.com. Oxford University may stop teaching sheet music because of its complicity in white supremacy. Dum-dum-dum-dum. Sheet music is now considered too colonial. So, by definition, colonial things now? What about colonial decor in your home? Is that racist? While Beethoven and Mozart and music curriculums in general are believed to have, quote, complicity in white supremacy, arguments against the music, which is one of the greatest achievements of Western civilization, arose not just from activist students, but from activist professors who say that the music study in its current composition is focused on, quote, white European music from the slave period. I see, so now we're abolishing anything that was around during the slave era. Bye-bye, food. So long, water. Adios, clothing. Musical notation is now believed to be part of a colonialist representational system. You notice how these amateur nation folks and the cancel culture people and the SJWs all manage to come up with these phrases that are multisyllabic and sound so official. Wow, colonialist representational system, that sounds serious. It probably is bad. No, it's dumb. The changes are being proposed to undergraduate-level courses, and the goal is to, quote, decolonize music study. I repeat from last week's episode, just because you say something or write it down does not make it so. If you can't see the communist influence in our American businesses, healthcare system, technology, and now child-rearing and education, and our culture, you're not only an amateur, you're ignorant and in denial. You get what you voted for, rookies. Additionally, requirements will no longer dictate that music students are taught to play piano or how to conduct orchestras because this too, quote, structurally centers white European music. According to these music instructors at Oxford, whose job it was to teach the history, scope, breadth, and practice of music, this can cause, quote, students of color great distress. Even the way music is taught, these professors complain, is a problem because the, quote, vast bulk of tutors for techniques are white men. Okay, comment from me. I don't think anyone is forcing anyone to study European music against their will or conduct an orchestra against their will. Take this baton, motherfucker! Now conduct! And why is it that kind of music is oppressive? Not that I give any fucks, but I'm willing to bet WAP might be a little disturbing to some people. Oh, I see, it only counts if it's something disturbing to millennial minorities, a small group within another small group, a weak-minded, weak-willed group. Got it. And you do realize without older music, new music is impossible, right? The same way that without old technology, new technology is impossible. The same way that history helps us learn from mistakes. Oh, that's right, just erase it. Got it. Hence the name The Great Reset. Just one problem with that. Those are just words. Calling it the Great Reset doesn't change musical, governmental, technological, medical, and social history. Hypothetical. If you have a heart attack at age 70 and do indeed die, like your heart stops and maybe you even go brain dead for a few minutes and then paramedics revive you, you're not a baby again. You don't start over. It's not a reset. I mean, sure, you might learn from it, eating healthier, stopping smoking, cutting back on drinking, exercising more or differently, making changes in your mental health, but you don't just get a redo. You adjust. What am I saying? Of course, if you're a pro listening to this show, you already know this. Special topics, back to the article, by the way, special topics would include introduction to sociocultural historical studies or African and African diasporic musics, global musics, and popular musics. So instead of studying the history of Western music, which has been evolving and changing for thousands upon thousands of years, students will study what is happening in music right now. The academics proposing these changes have stated that it is in direct reaction to the Black Lives Matter movement. Here's something to consider. Why the assumption that any non-white person doesn't like or cannot understand classical music? That's insanely rude, condescending, and yes, fucking a racist. I remember when the song Cult of Personality by Living Color hit. I'm a metalhead, right? I remember hearing things like, it's so weird having a black hard rocker, a black heavy metal song, or a black heavy metal band. Guess who did not even consider that? Heavy metal fans. Hello, Jimi Hendrix. pros/metal fans just knew that song kicked ass. I'm not saying the people who were surprised by their appearance were racist, because yeah, I admit it, I really hadn't seen a lot of that before. To that order, I highly recommend a band called Mother's Finest. It's an all-black group with a black female lead singer. It is a killer group with a singer that I would say is if Tina Turner went metal. Here's a little taste. How awesome was that? Here's the best part. The name of the album is Black Radio Won't Play This Record. Time now for Off Topic. Here we go. I'm amazed that people are so easily offended by people they never will meet or by words that they read, but have no problem being told where to stand, no problem being told that they are germ-filled beings, being told that they are inherently non-essential racists, and being pressured into things like untested vaccines, and aren't worried about being tracked at their every movement. But Dr. Seuss, math, racist babies, those are the enemies. Since we're taking down everything that involves oppression, we should probably start bulldozing those pesky pyramids and the Great Wall of China. Oh, wait, that's different slavery, that's not in America, so that doesn't count? I see. And we should also do a full court press and prosecute and jail anyone involved with the sex slave industry, which is thriving worldwide, including in America and especially in Hollywood. Oh, wait, that doesn't count? I see. It doesn't have to do with race. Something you could actually do something about now. So we're only against American slavery of 200 plus years ago. Got it. You're not against all forms of slavery, especially stuff that is currently happening. I understand. Something you could actually do something about now. Okay. Notice we're not seeing a lot of commercials for joining the armed forces. Conversate is not a word. Want proof? Try to type it in a text. Try to send it in a text using voice to text. Oh, and also here's more proof when you say it, you sound like an idiot. Time now for three pro things. Three things that are done right. Number one. I know I threw Lewis Hamilton under the bus in the three topics of Amateur Nation, but here's a pro thing. Formula One, Drive to Survive Season 3 on Netflix. Two words, in depth. So well directed, so well shot. This year, rather than go team by team, they kind of went driver by driver and their issues, their challenges, successes, and failures, and bounced around all over the racing schedule from 2020. Now, I saw Romain Grosjean's crash live when it happened, as he went straight into the wall at 160 miles an hour, right into the guardrail, causing his car to split in half upon impact and explode upon impact. But seeing the analysis, the angles, the slow-mo, the interviews on that special, on that series on Netflix, it's next level. Here's an amateur sidebar, however. They had to fuck it up and dedicate the last 5 to 7 minutes of the final episode to Black Lives Matter, which is a Marxist organization, and social justice crap, and have the ever-oppressed 7-time world champion Lewis Hamilton get on his soapbox. And that's why the fast-forward button was invented. Now, I will say this. Netflix shoots F1 better than ESPN does when they're covering the actual event live. Now, I will concede that shooting something live presents its own set of challenges, but nonetheless, sports broadcasting could take a lesson from at least shooting non-live segments, non-race-related segments, when it comes to broadcasting. See also Fox Sports 1 and the NHRA. Number two, the rockumentary Brainiac, Transmissions After Zero. It's on Amazon about what I will call, and I might be labeling this band incorrectly, a punk/new wave/electronic band, or punk/alternative band, and they're out of Dayton, Ohio, that was on the brink in the last great era of music, in my opinion, the 90s. Now, admittedly, I had never heard of that band because I don't really follow punk or new wave. We all know I'm a heavy metal fan at heart, but I love and respect all types of music, and I certainly am aware and respect the influence punk and new wave has had on the music landscape over the decades. What's important to know here is how I came about this documentary. Many years ago, when I hosted an online series about sex news from around the world called One Track Mind, and you can still find it on YouTube, my co-host and I were guests on National Lampoon Radio, and we met producer and host of a show, Kevin Couch. He's a fellow Ohioan and a fellow radio veteran like myself. We recently connected on LinkedIn. I asked him what he had been up to. Among other things, he had mentioned that he had done PR for Brainiac, Transmissions After Zero. Now, for the first time, I watched a documentary about the development and history of a punk band. Of course, I knew, you know, all the big punk bands, the Ramones, Sex Pistols, The Clash, but it was nice to see the progression of how a punk band formed starting at inception, and I'm sure the fact that they're from my home state of Ohio helped. I still don't quite understand punk music, but I certainly do respect it, but this is a really well-done documentary that holds the attention of someone who doesn't really even follow that genre, so if you are a punk fan, you will definitely like it. Number three. I'm warning you right now, get the Kleenex ready. They say that cooking is an expression of love, and this story certainly personifies that. This heartwarming story from goodnewsnetwork.com. Here's your headline. Chef drives 6 hours to Vermont to cook her favorite meal, soothing a customer in her final days. Here's the story. During the COVID-19 pandemic, takeout food has come to feel like an essential rather than a luxury. Of course, if your best loved dining spot isn't close to where you live, that generally puts the kibosh on a delivery, unless there happens to be a generous chef who's willing to go the extra miles, roughly 530 of them, to ensure a loyal customer gets to enjoy her favorite meal one more time. When Baltimore restaurant owner Steve Chu learned one of his longtime patrons, whose name is withheld for reasons of privacy, was losing her battle with cancer, rather than share the recipe for her go-to dish per son-in-law's Brandon Jones requests, the chef offered instead to make the 6-hour drive to Vermont to cook it for her in person. The woman's daughter, Rena, knows just how much the tempura broccoli from Chu's Asian fusion restaurant, Ekiben, means to her mom. Even though her mom was teasing, the 72-year-old made sure to put in her takeout order for Rena and Brandon's upcoming visit. She always told us, "When I'm on my deathbed, I want to have that broccoli," Rena said. "In fact, when I was packing on Friday to drive up to Vermont, I called my mom to see if she wanted us to bring anything special, and she jokingly said, 'Tempura broccoli!'" After confirming his plans with Rena and Brandon, Chu provisioned his pickup truck, and with business partner Ephraim Abibi and restaurant worker Joe Ananuevo in tow, the three men made the trek to Vermont. The next morning, Chu and his crew bivouacked in the parking lot of his unsuspecting patron's condo, where they proceeded to fire up the grill and get cooking. When the woman opened her door and saw Chu's familiar figure standing there with a takeout order, she could hardly believe her eyes. It was almost impossible for her to fathom that he'd be willing to travel from Baltimore to Vermont just to cook her a meal. Chu recognized his longtime customer the minute he set his eyes on her as well. While patrons come and go, he says she'd made a lasting impression, not only in the way she enjoyed his cooking, but in always making a point of praising the cuisine to his restaurant staff. Their mission accomplished, Chu and his crew turned down an offer to stay for dinner and headed back to Baltimore, also refusing to take any payment for their time and trouble. Rena Jones reported Chu's generosity left her and her mom with tears of gratitude and enough leftovers to stand them to lunch the following day. "She's a lovely lady who has showered us with love at our restaurant for years," Chu said, adding it was an honor to help fulfill the family's wishes. "It was a powerful experience, and I'm happy that we can make it happen. And that's the best takeaway we've had in ages." There's still hope, pros. If you have a topic, or if you read or saw something, or something happened to you that was amateur-related or pro-related, Or if you have a comment, criticism, or you're an advertiser who wants to reach people who have common sense, email me, lou@lousantini.com, and download my book from Amazon, subscribe to my YouTube page, and hear the show on 16 podcast platforms. Amateur Nation is not just a podcast, it's a movement. So, remember, amateurs, we see you. You're not at home. Don't do life wrong. Go pro. Don't be an amateur. For Amateur Nation, I'm Lou Santini, and this has been a Big Major production.